From Denver, Colorado, where the executive office of the president has been established for the next few weeks, we now present a special message by President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow citizens. Many months ago, I promised you one night that from time to time, either I or some member of the administration would appear before you to give you a report on our stewardship of your federal governmental affairs in Washington. Now, something like 70 hours ago, the 83rd Congress adjourned. It will not again meet unless there should be some unexpected crisis at home or abroad that would demand it to reassemble in Washington. In the absence of such crisis, the 84th Congress will take over next January. Now, this seems like a good time to report to you about the program that has engaged the attention of Congress and how successful we have been in carrying out the pledges we made to you more than 19 months ago. I must say in starting that I salute the membership of that Congress for their hard work, for their effective accomplishments. And I'm sure that after you take a quick look at this record, you will join in that salute. It seems to me that the best way to start this little talk is to do it against the backdrop of 19 months ago. Remember some of the crises that then existed in the world, crises at least as far as we were concerned. There was in Iran a fanatic in charge who was supported by the Communist Party, and weakly we felt there was a great danger of that huge reserve of oil falling into the hands of the communists. 60% of the world's known reserves of oil were the state. We had a beachhead of international communism starting in Guatemala. We had a terrible war in Indochina. We had the great argument going on in the Suez between two of our great international friends. And of course, there was the war in Korea, a war around which there had grown up such a political situation that military victory, at least a decisive military victory, was no longer in the cards. It was a war that brought home to us daily casualty lists with resulting sorrow in thousands of homes during the course of months. At home, aside from those casualty lists, there was the threat of inflation. It bothered us all. We were worried about the cheapening dollar and about the mounting prices in spite of the rigid controls that the federal government was attempting to enforce on all prices of wages and things and everything that we use. Along with this, and part of it, was a mounting deficit in the federal budget. Each year, we were falling further and further in debt. We were spending more than we were collecting, and the situation was such as to cheapen our dollar, to make our debt and our interest payments greater and greater, with the resulting load on the taxpayer. On top of this, for many months there had been an era of falling farm prices, and so the whole farm industry was suffering the effects of paying a lot of money for the things they had to buy, getting little in return, and the prospects looked even worse before them. Now, in this picture, in this situation, the administration took over a year ago last January and determined on a very broad program for strengthening America, strengthening at home spiritually, economically, and militarily, and making certain that it would be stronger internationally insofar as its peace and security was concerned. Now, at home, to make it more secure, there were a number of things to do. First, there were great and broad economic measures, a relieving of controls and all that sort of thing. There was the establishment of security measures so as to make it difficult, if not impossible, for communists to penetrate into the government or into any of the other great organisms of our country, and where they could weaken us and particularly if we should get into a crisis. There was a feeling that it was time for a new era of fair play, to treat everybody alike, to have no favored classes, and this administration was pledged to do everything it could for the benefit of 160 million American people and not for any single group, any single area, or any single geographic section. And then there was noticeable at that time, you will recall, a growing and continuing trend towards centralization in the federal government. Centralization of power and authority in Washington, with our affairs more and more being dictated in every kind of thing by a bureaucrat in that city. This administration was committed to decentralization, decentralizing our own individual affairs to ourselves where that was possible, and in government, decentralizing as far as possible to the states. You will recall that there was even an attempt at that time to take away from some of the states their own property, their own territory. We passed the Tidelands Bill to restore to those states, to assure them in their title to their proper lands. At the same time, we were in all sorts of businesses. We were making synthetic rubber. We were operating barge lines. We were operating coffee roasting plants and clothing stores and making rope. Well, we've been getting out of that, and we were committed to it, so as to return to you, the American people, the maximum of initiative, the maximum responsibility and authority for looking after your own affairs. Now, in the international field, it was plain, with these mounting deficits, we had to provide for our own security, but we had to do it as economically and effectively and as efficiently as possible. That has been the program of the administration. So, defense forces, instead of just saying, let's go out and buy a lot of security, we have been determining the priorities in which we should build these defense forces. We have tried to minimize effort on those that seemed less essential in this day of the atomic bomb, and to get those that seem to offer us the greatest amount of security and put our emphasis on those. This applies, of course, to air forces, not only in the air forces themselves, but in the Navy, which in itself deploys now a tremendous amount of air power and contributes markedly to our defense. Along with all of this, we tried to, through talks, frank and full talks with our allies, to establish better relationships, to get closer to them, to know exactly where we were going in spirit, in the development of our economic measures, and in the building of our military measures. NATO, of course, existed before this administration came in. I was serving in NATO when I was in Europe during my last tour. But there was the great Caracas conference, where all American countries agreed to that any penetration by international communism into this continent would be considered as a threat for all and to all. And that conference had much to do with the final elimination of the threat in Guatemala. Ever since we came in, we have been trying to establish a concert of nations in Southeast Asia. In April 16th, 1953, I made a speech on peace in the world, in which I urged that the free nations undertake that project. Now, the Indochina War has ceased under circumstances that are certainly not satisfactory to all of us. In some respects, they're disappointing. But at least we have an opportunity to again tackle that problem of getting a concert of nations that'll make that whole region safer and more secure for freedom. Now, this program at home can be defined, I think, best by saying this, that it has been a liberal program in all of those things that brings the federal government in contact with the individual. When he deals with the human and his problems and what the government has to do with it, it tries to be human, considerate, and sympathetic. And that means true liberalism. But when it comes to the economy of this country and your pocketbook and your taxes, it tries to be conservative. So it is conservative in the economy, liberal in human affairs. We have been developing a program that would bring about a country in which every citizen would have reason for bold hope, in which effort would be rewarded, for prosperity would be shared, freedom would expand, and peace would be as secure as humans can make it. It's a great program. It's a program to benefit all Americans. Now, let's take a look at how it made out. Now, in discussing what the Congress has done, my friends, I can't possibly take up even the major bills in detail. Literally, there were hundreds of bills passed by this Congress, but many of them are what are called the routine or the personal character. We calculate of the bills to promote the program of which I have been describing the purposes in general terms, there were about 64 of them. Now, these bills I couldn't possibly take up, but I will talk about three or four groups of them. And so I'll limit myself to that kind of a presentation this evening. Now, in the first place, the 83rd Congress did two things that previous Congresses have tried time and time again to do, and they failed to do. One, they passed the St. Lawrence Seaway Project. Five of my predecessors in office recommended that, and they got nowhere. The next thing they did was to pass an enormous tax revision bill. I don't mean just here and there reduction of taxes, but a great tax reform so as to make it more reasonable for you to deal in this whole tax program with your government, to remove inequities, and to make the whole thing fair. Now, I'm going to read, though, in terms that I think will be of interest to a great many of us, a few statistics as to what this tax bill has done just in the way of looking after people that have had special problems. First of all, in this matter of dependent children, you parents can now deduct $600 for each child, regardless of how much he earns, if he is under 19 and you furnish more than half his support. Now, even if he is over 19, you can deduct the $600 just as before if he's going to school or taking on-the-farm training. Now, such provisions save you taxpayers $85 million a year. Now, take the matter of child care. If you are a single working parent, such as a widow, you can deduct up to $600 additional for the expense of the child care for each child up to 12 years of age. This will save you $130 million. Medical expenses. And we know what this means to the ordinary family budget. You can deduct far more for medical expenses than you could under the old law. This will save taxpayers $80 million. Then for retired people. All of you who are 65 and older who are retired, including school teachers, firemen, policemen, and civil servants, and so on, will be exempt on retirement up to $1,200 of your income. This will give you a tax cut up to $240 a year. In its total, it will save taxpayers $141 million. Help for farmers. Farmers can now have deductions up to 25% of the total farm income for soil and water conservation. They get a faster write-off of the expenses of farm machinery and equipment. Now, these provisions will save these farmers $10 million. Depreciation. All of us, all of you, will get a more liberal write-off of the cost of new equipment, twice the amount now allowed in the first year. This will save $375 million. And then, this business of filing your final tax return. You have an additional month. It's April 15th now instead of March 15th. It gives you that much additional time to make your final payment. Now, here is the significance of all of these tax reforms and reductions during the last 19 months. First, they've saved you $7.4 billion. This is money you spend for yourselves now instead of the government spending it for you. Moreover, it's money that you are using for all of the things that you need to do. You're using your own decisions instead of using a bureaucrat's decision. Now, let me ask you this question. How many of you have any faintest idea of what $7 billion is? I had these statistics looked up for me. All the money that the American farmers got last year for all the corn and all the wheat grown in the entire United States, that was $7 billion. All of the money paid in all of last year for household utilities and for fuel amounted to $7 billion. All the money Americans pay each year for doctor, dentist, medical, and hospital bills is $7 billion. That gives you some idea of how money has been returned to you and how much of it has been returned. Now, along with these two items of the Seaway and the tax reform, which in themselves, with the long study and analysis and work involved, would have been an honorable record in addition to the routine bills, there have been many projects undertaken and successfully accomplished that will redound to your great benefit. Remember, I referred to the appalling federal deficits. We have reduced them 2/3. We're well on the way toward the goal, finally, of achieving balanced budgets in our income and our outgo. Now, we haven't used any meat axe in reducing the expenditures that are making this possible. It's been a selective type of reduction of expenditure, and it's taken a very great amount of work. But it is being done under the supervision of your cabinet officials, the department heads, and in cooperation with your Congress, so as to bring you 100 cents for every dollar you spend. This tax program, which I mentioned, incidentally, gives, on the average to each of you, 11% cut in your income taxes. Now, along with this, the administration has removed 200,000 people from the padded payrolls of the federal government. And that in itself is something order of $1 billion saving. We are, as I said, on the way to a balanced budget. But in going in that direction, we haven't placed a pocketbook above the heart. This is a human administration. Take housing. The housing measures enacted by Congress and the programs of this administration that will be fought through to the finish will make certain that every American family has an opportunity for a decent home. A home in a good neighborhood among good citizens. In fact, one of the great reasons for this housing program is to produce good citizens, to remove and eliminate those conditions that make crime and disorder rampant in certain sections. Now, along with this, there's all sorts of Social Security programs have gone into effect on a widened basis, reaching more people and with more liberal payments. This brings to the average American home peace of mind, domestic security. That is the kind of thing that is sought for in all these Social Security programs. Health, so important to all of us. We've gone into a program of hospital construction and the rehabilitation of the permanently disabled on a very broad basis. Now, we reject socialization of medicine. We don't believe in it. But we know, and everybody must know, that the United States, the people of the United States, are going to have access to good medical facilities. And we are attempting to bring out a program, and we will bring out a program that will make this possible. Scientific research will go on. Now, farm problem. When we took over, you will recall, farm income was toppling. And we had such unmanageable surpluses, which continued to grow at an alarming rate, that they were depressing the market, and there was literally nothing you could do as long as these growth of these surpluses wasn't checked to bring prosperity and the promise of real stability to the farmer. So we started out with the knowledge that every hour we were paying $30,000 of your money, every day $700,000 of your money, just for storage of these crops, which we couldn't dispose of and which were depressing the market and further cutting prices. Now, we've gotten a program that will encourage efficient production, will stimulate consumption, and stabilize farm income. It has been fought through to almost exactly the terms on which it was presented to the Congress. When we went into office last January, a year ago, you will remember it was a period of extreme international tension. Now, every single part of that problem was patiently studied, often on a bipartisan basis, always with the cooperation of legislative leaders, dealing with the Secretary of State, myself, and others in the executive departments engaged in this problem. The legislation proposed, and the legislation has been passed, is concerned with security and peace and building a strong concert of free nations, because that's the only way in which we can make certain that the communist menace will be stopped in this world, and finally driven back to where it belongs, to its own country. The foreign aid law is not one merely to to help other people for humanitarian purposes. It is to serve our own enlightened self-interest, to give us a greater security, a greater feeling of peace and confidence in the world. Reciprocal trade is another problem that is now under earnest study and will be taken up by the next Congress. We got another year as a result of the Randall Report in which to study certain features of this whole business so that our friends could with us make a living through profitable trade and which would eliminate the need for these great grants in the future. Now, at home, we have had to evolve new weapons in order to help defeat internal communism. The great thing we wanted to do was to find effective means of eliminating the communist or the subversive from any point where he could possibly damage us, but to do it by constitutional process. To make certain that if you or I or anybody else was called up to question for this about communism, he would be protected, but the government and all our people would be protected also. Now, the Attorney General made up a package program. I think there was a total of 15 bills that he turned into Congress on this matter, and 13 have been enacted by the Congress. That whole program was made up as a result of study by the FBI, the Attorney General, and all others who have been experienced in this great matter. It is a record during this past year, not only of operation as we went along, getting rid of people and deporting many people that shouldn't be here, but getting up the plan that will make us even better and stronger in the future. Now, how is all this record achieved? One man can't do it. The Congress can't do it alone. Well, first of all, there was almost unprecedented coordination, smooth coordination between House and Senate. Then there was a new era of coordination and cooperation between the legislative branches and the executive. My cabinet and I meet frequently with the legislative leaders, and through this process, we make certain that we're all going in the same direction. In addition, in the House and in the Senate, there have been energetic legislative captains, the men in responsible positions of leadership in both houses and who carry out the responsibilities and exercise the authority of committee chairman. Of course, in all foreign affairs, there are bipartisan consultations. These take place at frequent intervals in order that we do not allow this great subject, which affects the safety and security of all America, to become a subject of partisan politics. That must never happen. And certainly, we are doing our very best, and I have always pledged my best efforts to see that it cannot occur. But all in all, there were 64, as I say, of these legislative projects submitted to the Congress. Now, 54 of them were enacted into law. We didn't always make home runs, but we did have 54 hits. Some of them aren't quite what we wanted. Now, that, after all, is a batting average of 830. And any baseball fan will tell you that's pretty good going in any league. The next question is the job done? And the obvious and emphatic answer is no, of course not. We're at the mid-mark. We're going ahead with this program. We're going to get lots of things that have not yet been done. We're going to have a restudy of this question of making a reasonable reduction in the minimum voting age. Health reinsurance we're going to put before the Congress again because we must have means open to every American family so that they can insure themselves cheaply against the possibility of a catastrophe in the medical line. The Taft-Hartley Act needs some revisions, and again, they will be proposed to the Congress. I already mentioned the subject of foreign trade. It will be one of our big jobs for the coming year. Now, I said that I've been disappointed. I don't mean individually or personally. I am disappointed because this program has been designed through study and work and cooperation with hundreds and literally thousands of people for your benefit, for your greater prosperity at home and your greater security abroad. So when I'm disappointed, I mean I'm disappointed for all of us, 160 million people. Nevertheless, every American can be proud of this 83rd Congress and can join in my salute to it. Every fact today that we have gives the lie to those prophets of gloom and doom that saw that we were going to be in economic depression and forming breadlines at this time in our history. Of course, we're going ahead with bold courage, All of it. Now, what about the future? Our domestic house is partially in order. I mentioned a few items we must still get into the hopper and get accomplished, but we're going ahead. And the whole plan and program is founded on respect for human freedom, dignity, and rights, and in the effort to obtain peace. So our relations with the external world will be the thing on which we must have to emphasize our efforts during the coming months. We will make certain that our friends understand us better. I've already mentioned such places as Korea and Iran and Suez and Guatemala, where great threats to our peace and security have already been removed. Now, I want to say this. The papers right now are filled with gloomy predictions about Europe. Don't be too discouraged. In that country, our great friends of mine, they are great statesmen. They are laboring for peace. They want peace as much as you and I do. And they are not licked yet, and we're certainly not licked, and let's don't lose faith in them. There's still something to be done in that region, and we're going to do it. We're going to develop better partnerships in all parts of the world between us and our cooperating friends. And now, my friends, here we are. If we're going ahead with this program, if you want it to go ahead, the decisions are largely up to you, because it's the character of the 84th Congress that will determine, can we go ahead and push through on all these programs for the benefit of America, or will we be stopped by some kind of political arguments? We want to go ahead. We're sure that you want us to go ahead. All of my mail shows exactly that, that you, with us, are looking forward to peace abroad, greater security, and greater prosperity at home. And now, my friends, thank you very much, and good night.
You have just heard an address by the President of the United States, who spoke to you from Denver, Colorado. Ladies and gentlemen, here are late headlines from the NBC newsroom in New York. American Airlines and its pilots agreed tonight to end their 24-day strike and resume flights at midnight on Tuesday. The joint announcement said the pilots had agreed to continue flying nonstop westbound transcontinental flights without crew changes over 8 hours. And it's believed that 23 persons are lost in the crash of a Royal Dutch KLM airliner off the Dutch coast. The plane was bound from New York, and most of the 14 passengers aboard were Americans. Those are late news headlines from the NBC newsroom in New York, Roger Tuttle reporting.